This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk. My guest is journalist and filmmaker Sebastian Younger, author of 6 books. We first met with his book, War. His newest title is Freedom. Welcome back to Book Talk.
Thank you.
What's happening as your book opens up?
Well, part of the book documents a 400-mile trek that I took with a few other guys. We'd all been in a lot of combat, and we walked from Washington, D.C. along the railroad lines to Philadelphia and then headed west for Pittsburgh. And so at the beginning of the book, I'm describing that point in our we called it high-speed vagrancy. We were sort of sleeping under bridges and abandoned buildings and cooking over fires and such. And we were moving pretty fast. And I described this point in the beginning where the East Coast, with its sort of mixed, you know, its houses and its high population and its, you know, a lot of control, really, all of a sudden that changes west of Harrisburg and you're sort of in the wild. And the first paragraph talks about that transition.
How many people did you end up traveling with?
Most of the trip was with 3 other guys. There were a couple of other friends that I did different sections with. I think there was a total of 8 altogether that set foot on the railroad lines with me in one capacity or another.
After devoting a book to this word freedom, how do you define it?
Oh, I don't even attempt to define it in the book. I mean, it's in part because there's many definitions. There's no one definition. Some people, you know, they define freedom as an inner metaphysical state. One guy that I talked to, he's not in the book, but he did decades in prison for committing a very serious crime. And I asked him if it's possible to be more free inside prison than outside prison. And he said, oh, yeah, absolutely. He said, you know, you can't be a drug addict in prison. Addiction is not freedom. You can't even be distracted. You know, people have their iPhones and all this stuff going on. And like in prison, there's nothing but time. And eventually you're going to have an honest conversation with yourself about who you are. And then that's a form of freedom. So there are so many different important definitions to it. I don't choose one as the most important.
What you've come up with, how is it different than what some people call political freedom?
So one good definition of freedom is that you're free from oppression. You're not free of obligation. You owe things to the country. You owe things to the group. But you're free of oppression by powerful people. And that, of course, is the heart of a democracy. In a monarchy, the monarch, the ruling elite, can more or less do whatever they want. They can kill, they can steal, they can basically do whatever they want, even to their own people, and they're not accountable. That is not political freedom. Democracy is a form of political freedom. So are hunter-gatherer communities that typify our evolutionary past. There's very little social stratification in those kinds of communities. It's typically 30 or 40 people. Leadership is by the consent of the led. There really is no way to accumulate wealth or to abuse authority. And you know, so I would argue that that's also a form of freedom. I don't know if you'd call it political or not. Mm-hmm.
How did you organize the book?
The book is divided into 3 sections. Run, the 3 ways that smaller individuals or smaller groups have been able to maintain their autonomy, their ability to be self-defining in the face of a superior force. The first thing people do to maintain their autonomy is run. The Apache stayed on the move, very mobile, for 300 years. The Pueblo societies that were much wealthier than the Apache were sort of rooted in place because they're agriculturalists, and they got rolled by the Spanish immediately. The Apache remained free until almost 1900. I mean, almost within my grandmother's lifetime. It's because they were so mobile. They were materially poor, but they were very, very mobile. But if you can't outrun the dominant society, the dominant force, you're going to have to outfight them. And, you know, unique to humans is that a smaller individual or a smaller group can actually defeat a larger one. That's not true of elk and grizzly bear and chimpanzees and everything else. And it scales up. I mean, not only can a smaller fighter dominate a larger one, but a small insurgency like the Taliban can actually outfight a global superpower. If that is unique to humans. And if that weren't true, and I loathe the Taliban, right? But if that weren't true, the world would be made up of huge fascist megastates that really did not allow for any self-definition by other by other societies. You know, finally, within your own society, if you want to reform, say, the American system, you're not trying to overthrow the government. You're trying to reform it with labor laws and things like that. I looked at the labor movement 100 years ago. It's not an out-and-out street fight. It's more complex than that. And that's where you have to outthink the enemy. And that's exactly what the labor movement did, you know, around a century ago. And in that kind of fight, it's very, very important to have leadership that will, in any of those fights, it's important to have leadership that is self-sacrificing, that will literally or figuratively take a bullet for the movement. It's also very important to involve women in the effort. Women are crucial to that kind of complex struggle within a modern society.
Back to the Taliban, you have history in Afghanistan. What do you think is going to happen when the American troops are gone?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I don't know, obviously, but I'll tell you what the risks are, is the risks are exactly what happened in the early 90s. The Soviets pulled out of Afghanistan and immediately the U.S. did. We'd supported the Mujahideen in their righteous fight against the Soviets. And we pulled out and the society imploded in the violence and the chaos and the corruption of this completely destroyed society that was filled full of weapons and really had no rule of law and no government. Into the vacuum came the Taliban, came religious extremism. And so, of course, the risk right now, the fear is that when the U.S. pulls out, we're not pulling out very many people. I think it's 2,000 soldiers, right? I mean, there's 40,000 cops in New York City. It's a very small force, but it's an important force. It's sort of a tripwire. The Taliban really cannot take the major population centers in Afghanistan as long as even that force is there. With us completely gone, of course, there's a chance the Taliban will take over. I think the price we paid, if that happens, the price will be paid by the Afghan people, much like it was in the 1990s.
Any ideas for an alternate solution?
Well, I mean, the alternate solution would be to stay there with a token force of 2,000 and to act as a final impediment to the Taliban and force them to the negotiating table. You know, now they have no reason to negotiate because, you know, we are gone and there's no reason for them to concede anything. So the alternate would be to not do what we're doing.
Do you bring along any tools of the writing trade besides pen and paper on your travels?
No, I have a kind of notebook I like to carry, and I had a fistful of pens. You know, I didn't know I was going to write a book about freedom, and I didn't know I was going to write a book about this trip. It's just a trip that I took. But because I'm a writer, I suppose, I write down everything that seems interesting to me in my life. And this was a very, very interesting experience. So at the end of every day, I'd write down my thoughts about the day, events that had happened. Sometimes during, you know, water breaks, I would pull the notebook out and write some stuff down. So at the end of the, you know, I did this trip years ago, half a dozen years ago. And so, so at the end, I had five notebooks and I made use of those when I wrote my book, Freedom.
What do you hope readers will get from your book?
The quest for freedom and the quest for human dignity are very, very closely interwoven. And it's one of the few things that people will die for. The times that brave people have risen up and insisted on their full rights have been some of the most noble in history. And so what I want people to understand is what a beautiful enterprise that is, the maintaining of freedom. And I don't want people to misuse the word for bad ends. And that word gets misused all the time by people who need a sort of moral or political justification for what they're doing. And those people must be called out immediately.
Well, thank you. My guest is Sebastian Younger, author of Freedom, published by Simon & Schuster. This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk.
Thank you so much, Diana. I really enjoyed that conversation.
You're welcome.